Is God still faithful when he allows wicked people to roam the earth and life seems great for them, yet a 15-year-old boy that genuinely loves him and wants to serve him gets cancer? Is God still good when you ask him to heal your child, but instead the doctors tell you he's going to die? Does God see what's going on? Is he really in control? After Todd's release from the hospital, the physical improvements in him was so drastic that I thought that maybe getting the feeding tube out, it had been the cause of all his problems. Just 2 days later, he wanted to go to Sunday morning church. It was wonderful to see so many people from our congregation call out his name when they saw him. And I was afraid that some of them would actually crush his frail body as they gathered him in his arms. The most precious part of the morning was when our pastor had a special time of prayer for Todd. He told the congregation that the doctors had said there was nothing more medically speaking that could be done for Todd. He then asked everyone to divide up in groups of two or three to pray for healing if it would be the Lord's will. It was powerful to hear Todd's name spoken all throughout our large congregation. I was filled with hope that God would still do a miracle for Todd. After church, we went to lunch with some of our dear family friends. During this lunch, their family graciously offered to take our whole family with them to Disney World so we could make some memories. Within about 4 hours of that conversation, we all had obtained our plane tickets, made plans for all of the kids to get out of school and the adults to get out of work. We had a hotel and the Disney tickets were purchased. When all of the arrangements were made and we announced to all 8 kids that we were going to this trip, their screams of delight were deafening. But it was worth it to see the joy on Todd's face. He had been through so much, and I was thrilled to see him out of the hospital with something great to look forward to. We planned to leave the next morning. Todd was quite sick the morning of our departure, and I was scared. I begged God to give us this family time together. By the time we arrived to the airport and had gotten through security, Todd felt much better. He was smiling and laughing, and it warmed my heart to see the joy he was experiencing. Now, this is not part of what I was going to say, but I'm going to tell you this story. So we were at the airport, and this has to do with Jeffrey, because I told you about him last night. We were sitting there, I'm with Todd, Jeffrey's little with his friend, and all of a sudden these two police officers start walking toward me. And I kind of went like this to my friend Sean, yeah, they're probably after Buddy and Jeffrey. Well, they had this really intense stare, and they were staring at us. And they came up to us, and they said to Todd, you stole that sweet tea. He had this container of sweet tea. And I was like, oh my goodness, he's going to die in jail. He had been thirsty, and my husband asked my husband if he could have some money. So my husband gave him the money for this drink, and Todd said, this is him, so random. I didn't steal it. I have a receipt. What kid keeps a receipt? But he kept his sweet tea receipt. So the police officer said, come with me. And so we went over to the lady who had accused him of stealing the sweet tea. And the officer said, he has a receipt. And she said, oh, I thought he stole it. And I started to cry. He said, you're fine. You can go. And Todd was like, all right. And so he just walked back to his seat. Well, I started to cry. And I said to the officer, I cannot believe that she did that. He has cancer. He's dying. This is our last trip. And he said, I'm so sorry. I'll make it up to you. And so we sat down, and I told everybody what had happened. A few minutes later, he called me back over, and he said, ma'am, I'm so sorry. She's done that to other people. And I'm going to make this up to you. So he got Todd and I on the plane first, and Todd met the pilot, and the manager of the airport came and brought Todd another sweet tea for the trip and a box of food. And the stewardess said, we'd like to welcome Todd Lurdy on his first plane ride. And so they totally made it up. And we have later since met up with the same policeman. I saw him about 3 years ago, and he had that same kind of stare. And I said, I don't know if you'll remember this, but about 3 years ago, my son had cancer, and he said, and that lady accused him of stealing sweet tea. I remember, and I was able to give a witness to him, so that was good. As we flew over the fluffy white clouds, I had to brush away tears. I wondered if the beautiful scene in front of me looked anything like heaven. I couldn't imagine our lives without Todd, and just prayed for a miracle in his life and for the ability to enjoy our time together and not worry about the future. When we arrived at Disney, Todd, although physically weak at times, still wanted to go on all of the rides, including the upside-down roller coaster. It was such a joy to see the huge smile on his face and to see him out of that hospital bed. He even began to eat at every meal. He had barely eaten since October. The physical change in him was dramatic in a good way, so much so that I again wondered if the doctors had been terribly mistaken about the recent diagnosis and the Lord was going to heal him. For those 5 days at Disney, cancer, though never far from our minds, was definitely on the back burner. We laughed, hid some tears, but definitely made precious memories. As we flew home from that wonderful trip, I feverishly planned what I could do to help Todd. My first course of action was to take Todd to a Christian nutritionist. After speaking with this man, I knew I was going to have to try to have Todd eat a certain alkaline diet. The nutritionist told me that cancer cannot live in an alkaline environment. In addition to only eating certain foods, there was also a very costly drink that would put alkaline directly into Todd's bloodstream. I ordered the drink and continued to plan out Todd's care. I contacted St. Jude's Children's Hospital and Mass General in Boston. I was sure one of those leading hospitals could help him. While I waited to hear back from the two hospitals, I did some research into taking Todd to Mexico for alternative treatments. At the advice of one of Todd's oncologists, I quickly decided against that route. Through it all, the oncologist begged me to choose quality of life for Todd. I saw the look in the oncologist's eyes that showed me she didn't think he was going to beat his cancer. I loved this oncologist, but I kept thinking, "You're wrong. I know God can do a miracle for Todd." I felt that despite how desperate the situation was, the Lord was still going to do something big. I could feel hope coming alive in me once again. When the alkaline drink finally arrived in the mail, I had great hopes that this would be the cure for Todd's cancer. The drink smelled like swamp water, and Todd was extremely hesitant to try it. I begged him to plug his nose and quickly drink down the 8-ounce bottle. But he took one sip and promptly threw it up. I was devastated. Once again, my hopes were dashed. I called the nutritionist and told him that Todd couldn't keep down the drink. He told me there were still other supplements Todd could try, some that might be more palatable. It was a constant battle trying to keep nutrition in Todd's body. There were very few things that tasted good to Todd other than sweet tea and milk. It seemed like after the trip to Disney, his appetite went away again. He could always tell when I added supplements to his beverage and that he didn't even want to drink them. I felt like I spent my days trying to get him to eat and drink. I was determined to do everything in my power to help him. I felt like I was standing in a huge arena and looking all around, begging someone to step forward and tell me what they would do to help my son. Life seemed to just be a huge waiting game. I was waiting for a miracle. I hoped that one of the two hospitals would be the answer to my prayers, but that too was not meant to be. Eventually, the two hospitals got back with me. Their answers were the same. We can't do anything for him. All the doors I had tried so desperately to open were shut, and we had seemingly run out of options. Throughout everything, I tried to keep a brave face, but inwardly, I was troubled. I felt like I was coming up with great plans and that my prayers and the desires of my heart were valid, but God didn't seem to do anything I asked of him. He didn't seem to really be listening to me. I felt like I had a right to ask him what I wanted him to do. As much as I tried, at times it was hard to hide my tears from Todd, but even when I couldn't hold them back, he seemed to understand. In the midst of caring for Todd, I struggled to keep things as normal as possible at home. Brandon, Lauren, and Jeffrey were all still in school. I had no idea what God had in store for those days and weeks ahead. All we could do as a family was live one day at a time, love Todd, and make memories. On March 4th, 2013, we celebrated Todd's 16th birthday. It was a bittersweet day because my birthday is the day before Todd's, and I wondered if we would ever celebrate our birthdays together again. It was sweet because for Todd, his entire freshman class had a surprise birthday party for him. I fought back tears as I watched him interact with the friends he had missed so much. What did the future hold? I couldn't imagine that God would let Todd die. But would he allow him to live? How I wish we could go back to the days before cancer forever changed our lives. Between February 10th and March, Todd had mostly good days, and we saw glimmers of hope that maybe God would heal him. I continued to take Todd to the cancer clinic to have his blood counts checked and to give him fluids when necessary. At one point, a scan revealed that the once aggressive tumor had stopped growing, and I felt encouraged. However, by the beginning of April, his condition seemed to deteriorate. He began to have more pain, and a scan revealed that the tumor was growing once again. Todd's oncologist advised us to call in hospice because they felt, not because they felt he was close to death, but just to have them in place in case we needed them. We continued to live one day at a time, but I couldn't help but wonder if we were going to lose Todd. I couldn't fathom what God's plan may be to take away my child, a child that had loved him so much. What good would ever come of that? I couldn't begin to imagine how our family could live without him. Nothing made sense. All throughout Todd's cancer journey, the Lord knew exactly what I needed and when I needed the encouragement. I will never forget when a group of pastors asked if they could get together and pray over Todd. David and I were thrilled and hopeful that this was God's leading. We definitely needed the prayer. It was such a precious time. As I listened to each of the men pour out their hearts to the Lord, they were all united in their specific requests, asking God for Todd's complete healing and for strength for our family. In my heart, I thought, God may not listen to my prayers, but surely he'll listen to them. There has to be a reason that the pastors feel led to have this prayer time. It has to accomplish something. Although our circumstances hadn't changed, we left that prayer time with renewed hope. All too quickly, March turned into April. I was so glad that Todd was still with us. He was precious and always wanted to make sure I was doing all right. A couple of times he left the house to be with friends, but it was never for very long. He was painfully thin and very weak. I think he just wanted to be home, and I was just fine with that. From the time of Todd's diagnosis in October, I barely left his side. I always had a desperate need to be with him, and surprisingly, he always wanted me to be with him as well. He and I usually got along great, but one day I got really upset with him. The nutritional food and supplements I thought might cure his cancer were just too hard for him to eat and drink. He told me he just couldn't take them anymore. After yelling out in frustration, "I'm just trying to save your life," I left the house and actually took a drive to calm myself down. I drove around crying angry tears and pouring out my complaints to the Lord. It didn't take me long to realize that my anger was not toward Todd, but rather a response to the great fear I felt inside. Once I acknowledged my fear, all I wanted to do was drive back home to Todd. I had no more options, no more plans, and it appeared time may be running out. When I returned home, Todd immediately met me at the door and asked if he could talk with me in my room. He was crying, which was totally uncharacteristic for him. We sat down on my bed and he said, "Mom, I'm sorry I'm a bad son. I'm trying to eat and drink what you give me, but it makes me feel so awful inside. You just don't know how I feel." Of course, I burst into tears. I felt so guilty for the anger I showed toward him. Truthfully, I was terrified of losing him. I gathered him in my arms and through my own tears told him he had never been a bad son. I told him how much I loved him and how sorry I was for pressuring him. I told him that he was my hero. As we sat on my bed clinging to each other, my heart was immediately filled with resignation. I wasn't giving up on him. I was giving up my personal fight to make things happen my way. I said, "Todd, we aren't going to use any crutches any longer. Our total dependence for your healing will be on God alone." In that moment, I wondered if all along God was waiting for me to place Todd in his arms with zero dependence on anyone or anything else. I didn't know if God would choose to heal him, but in that moment, I was confident he could. Later that night, I prayed and told the Lord that I was carrying my sick child to him. I claimed verses that to me meant God would heal Todd no matter how bleak the situation seemed. Matthew 8:2 says, "And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, if you will, you can make me clean.' And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, 'I will, be clean.'" Matthew 9:18 says, "While he was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, 'My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live.' And Jesus rose up and followed him with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, 'If I can only touch his garment, I will be made well.' Jesus turned and seeing her said, 'Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well.' And instantly the woman was made well. With great hope, I was placing Todd into his arms for healing. At this point, my faith became what it was meant to be all along, total dependence on God. There was no other way. As the next few weeks passed, I could see Todd was really slowing down physically. His smile was there, but it was fading. I knew he was in pain. Every morning when he walked in from his bedroom into the family room, I had the thought, "Thank you, Lord, it's not today. If Todd could still walk into the room, it must not be the day God would take him home." On the night of May 9th, 2013, the Lord gave Todd and I some precious time alone. The rest of our family had gone to a graduation party, and I had an overwhelming urge to share my heart with Todd. I started the conversation by telling him I knew he had asked Jesus to be a savior, so I just wanted to talk to him about heaven. I carefully tried to weigh my words as I spoke. I didn't want him to think for one minute that I was giving up hope that God would heal him, or to even let him think that his death might be imminent, because that's not how I felt at all. I told him that no one knew how long his or her days would be on earth. I quoted Psalm 139:16. "Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them." I told Todd that before he was even born, God knew the day he would die. Cancer was not going to cut his life short. I confess that I often wondered what it would be like to die, to actually go from earth to heaven, because the passing over part sometimes concerned me. I told Todd that if God took him to heaven before me, I hoped the passing over part would be as peaceful as he would just be sitting in the living room with me one minute, and in the next blink he would wake up in heaven. It would be my prayer that he would go from my arms to God's arms. I said, "Todd, if the Lord takes me to heaven before you, I'll meet you at heaven's gate. If the Lord takes you to heaven before me, you meet me at heaven's gate." I continued by telling him that if it were God's plan to take him in the near future, there would not be one single thing he would miss out on this earth. And there was nothing more important on earth than what would take place in heaven. We talked about the mansion God is preparing for each of us and how wonderful it will be when we will see it. We happily talked about the things we hoped would be in our mansion, like a sweet tea spigot for Todd and a cafe francais spigot for me, and how we hoped we'd get to live next door to each other. I also reminded him, "Todd, do you remember when you were little and you told me you would spoon-feed me my Jell-O when I got old?" He said, "Yes, I remember." I said, "I'm going to hold you to it." How I wished he had assured me that he would be there for me when I got old, but he didn't say anything. After some more light-hearted conversation together, I said, "Todd, what do you hope will come from your illness?" He said, "I just want to get better so I can be a testimony for the Lord." I responded, "You already are a testimony for the Lord right now." I reminded him that people were watching him go through cancer, and his sweet response might be the testimony the Lord chose to use, not the healing. The next words were the most difficult of all to say. "Todd, when you don't feel like fighting anymore, you can go and be with Jesus." I expected him to tell me that he was going to keep fighting, but instead, the look on his face revealed that it was almost as if he had been waiting to hear those words, as if he were relieved. He said, I'm worried about you, but I promise I'd be okay, and if I ever found out I was not okay, I promised to get help. Although I couldn't say much of this without tears, God gave me a great amount of strength to say exactly what was on my heart. I told Todd that he was my hero and I loved him so much. He let me talk for quite a while, and although I could have kept talking to him forever, I could see he was getting tired and I didn't want to overwhelm him. As I hugged him goodnight, I honestly held on to faith in the fact that God could still heal him if he chose to. Todd didn't feel well and wanted to sleep on the couch that night rather than in his bedroom. As he went to bed that night, I never expected his death would be so soon at hand. The next morning, Todd told me he had been sick through the night. I gave him some nausea medicine and told him to get something to drink. The medicine seemed to help, and he appeared just to be resting comfortably on the couch. Around lunchtime, Todd's surgeon came over for a visit with him for a little bit. When it was time for him to leave, I looked at Todd and noticed he was falling asleep. It was very uncharacteristic of him. I went in and asked him if he was okay, and he began to speak incoherently to me. I felt very nervous at this sudden change of behavior, so I called the hospice nurse and she came to the house right away. After checking Todd's vitals, she quietly told me she did not feel like he was actively dying because he was still too alert. Different friends and family had been calling to check on Todd throughout the day, and a few people felt led of the Lord to stop by to see him, not even knowing what was happening. At one point, our friends, the ones that had taken our family on that wonderful trip to Disney, came over just because they both each separately felt that was what God wanted them to do. They had no idea Todd was so sick. We privately told them what seemed to be happening with him. As Todd appeared to be sleeping, my friends spoke sweet words to him and then jokingly referred to him as Meat Man, a nickname their family had given him because of how much he loved steak. So she said, Todd, I remember, you know, you and I love to eat steak together. And all of a sudden he said, with A1. Even in his last hours and in that current state, Todd was true to himself, making random comments. If she were going to talk to him about eating steak, it had to have A1 on it. After a few hours, the hospice nurse came back from her errand, and after examining him, she told me now she felt like Todd was actively dying. I couldn't believe how fast everything was happening. Thankfully, he had stopped mumbling and still appeared to be resting comfortably. Every once in a while, he would say something. One time, he opened his eyes and asked me to put on some music, and I got up and put on some peaceful hymns. I had been sitting at the end of the couch holding his cold feet when all of a sudden he opened his eyes and said, I want you to put your cheeks right here, and he pointed to his side. I got up and sat on the floor right by his head and took his hands in mine. Although I didn't want to admit it, I knew what was happening. I told him how much I loved him. I told him he was my hero. I sang to him, even though my voice was cracking with emotion, and I'll never forget the song, I Could Not Do Without You. The last verse was what I actually sang to him. I could not do without thee, for years are fleeting fast, and soon in solemn loneliness the river must be passed. But thou wilt never leave me, and though the waves roll high, I know thou wilt be near me and whisper, it is I. I asked Todd a few questions because I wanted to know if heaven was starting to come in view for him. I asked if he could see heaven. No response. I asked him if he could see pretty flowers or angels. Again, no response. I asked him if he heard any music. He didn't answer me. I felt scared and troubled. Why couldn't he tell me if he could see heaven? Finally, I asked, Todd, do you see Jesus? Slowly and deliberately, he answered, not yet. I rested my cheek on his hands, and a few moments later, he rubbed his fingers gently over mine 2 or 3 times. Thinking back on that moment, with all my heart, I believe he was letting me know, I see him now. I immediately looked at Todd's face in time to see him take his last breath. At 9:20, as I held his hands in mine right on our living room couch, just as exactly how I had prayed, Todd met his Savior face to face, May 10th, 2013. As I think back on that night, it was precious, and in many ways it was peaceful and not at all catastrophic that was predicted. God had answered my prayer to have Todd have a peaceful transition to heaven. It was an incredible privilege to walk with him through the valley of the shadow of death, but it was beyond any pain I had ever endured. In the weeks following Todd's death and up until the funeral, our friends and family surrounded us with their comfort, including my dear high school friends, Lois and Diane. To know we had a community of believers supporting us was amazing. The Lord truly gave me strength for all that went into the planning and viewing and funeral, and I could sense his presence. But as the days and weeks went by and life went on for everyone else, the Lord didn't seem so close to me anymore. Days that were once filled with taking care of Todd were now spent alone. My husband went back to work and my other kids went back to school. I had nothing to do but sit alone, and I began to grieve deeply. Satan whispered lies into my ear, and I listened. I wondered how God could claim to love me, yet cause me such pain. How could he consider me his child? I would never hurt any of my children like the Lord was hurting me. I questioned why it seemed like the prayers of godly pastors and people from all over the world didn't reach God's ears. Again, I thought, even if my faith wasn't all that it should be, everyone else's faith should have counted for something. Had I done something wrong? I struggled with thoughts that God was mean, and I questioned why he didn't do things according to my plans, especially when I was trying to honor him with everything. When I finally had truly placed my faith in him for Todd's healing, as small as it might have been, in my mind, he let me down. I wasn't asking God for anything too difficult. I was asking God to heal my precious son, just like he had healed others in the Bible. I had placed Todd in God's arms for healing, and he took him from me, and it seemed like he walked away. I tried so desperately to do everything in my power to save my son's life. I tried to help him in every way physically, and at the same time, I tried to cling to faith. I confessed to the Lord that most of the time my faith was smaller than a grain of mustard seed, but at least it was there. I came to the conclusion that I hadn't really had enough faith after all, and God knew it. I felt Todd's death was my punishment. I really didn't have anything to say to the Lord. I remember at one point saying to the Lord, "Don't talk to me." But deep down, I knew I didn't mean it. I had to hear from him. I couldn't breathe without his presence. It's just that I didn't think he could say anything that would change anything how I felt. A few months after Todd died, as I was wallowing in deep sadness, Lois, my dear friend from boarding school, reminded me that a drowning person couldn't be saved until they stopped flailing. I wondered if that's how God viewed me. It seemed like he patiently waited to send me a lifeline until I was ready to stop struggling and be still before him. I was about to learn the most powerful lessons of all.